young girls continue to be shown they could have a future in STEM careers, and pop culture is giving it a boost. The film Hidden Figures is about the female brains behind the John Glenn mission, and it continues to draw audiences and acclaim since its release in early January. Education, though, has taken a more conservative turn with the Trump administration, and we wondered how women currently in STEM careers, and who would like to see their ranks swell, look to the future of STEM. Dr. Helen Turner is a professor of biology and is the dean of natural sciences and mathematics at Chaminade University. She'll be leading a panel on the 23rd Annual Science Symposium for Girls at Sacred Hearts Academy tomorrow. She's in our studio, though. Today. Good morning.
Good morning, Bethann.
Nice to have you here. Now, there seems to be this dichotomy of all the effort that we pushed into showing girls what they could have in a STEM career, and yet when they get out and go looking for those careers, they aren't exactly welcome or at least well supported. How do you look at that as being a woman who has been for so many years in a STEM career?
You know, I think you're right. I think that, you know, looking at the fact now we have about 25% of the STEM workforce in the U.S. are women, and we have to now ask the hard questions about the big push that we've made in the last decades. How has that got us to this point? And, you know, I think a lot of us who are involved in STEM pipeline development feel that we've sort of fostered STEM engagement in young women. We've built pipelines. But we didn't yet fix the system that they're going into. And so I think when you still see statistics now where at about 10 years into their science career, we just hemorrhage women, right? We lose them in unbelievable numbers from the profession. And so, you know, we haven't fixed that systemic lack of engagement of women and lack of advancement in women in the profession.
And at the 10-year line, I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot to think about the fact that they're probably coming into the time in which they may be having families or having to deal more with their families, adding to their families, and that seems to be an unwelcome occurrence in the STEM community.
Right, adding children to your career profile, adding, you know, caring for elderly relatives. I mean, all of these things that we know from the social science literature disproportionately affect women in every sector of the workforce, and that's also true for STEM. I think that we have not, there are isolated initiatives all over the country where you look at campuses, academic institutions like Berkeley becoming family friendly and really asking the hard questions about what does it mean to do that, what kind of resources you have to allocate to do that. But it's not yet systemic. It's not yet part of the way that we choose to do science as a community.
So what are those questions?
So I think, you know, when we think about it, we have to look at the way that science itself discriminates against women. So, you know, there's been some very high profile cases recently. Gender inequity in the peer review system has been exposed. And there have been these very high profile cases of women experiencing sexual harassment systemically, either from, leading figures in the field, sometimes very famous scientists. And, you know, and simply, you know, when they're going on field trips, there's a huge amount of literature now on what's happening to women when they're in the lab, when they're in the field. And so, you know, I think the cause for optimism, though, is that these things have come to light. You know, and that's the big thing that I think has changed in the last few years, is that we're starting to see exposure of these issues. And with that will come more vigilance about them and also more self-advocacy when they face them for these young women who are going into science. And we have to have some optimism, I think, that there are more female role models and more female mentors who are receiving the women that we push into science through these pipelines. I'm not saying that there are enough yet, but there definitely are a lot more than there used to be.
We know a young woman who is in her early 40s, mother of two, also going through or also went through a doctoral program here as a postdoc. Thought she was going to be able to get a lab of her own. Mm-hmm. Her husband, also a postdoc, he was given the lab. She was given sort of the spousal consolation prize.
And that's a pattern that one sees over and over again. I think that as scientific families are often forced to live geographically separated existences, you know, that places a lot of stresses, and it's a choice that a lot of people just don't want to make. And I think, you know, when we look at when women drop off of the scientific radar in their 30s. I mean, I believe we see, you know, all of the things that the literature says, you know, commitment to family, all this, but a lot of women just get tired of the fight. And I think especially if trying to maintain your family structure becomes part of that fight, that's an enormous pressure.
And that seems to be borne out by the fact that, as you said, we only have 25% of women mm-hmm. continually in STEM. And maybe perhaps the other 75% are counting on that fact?
Right, right. I think that that is, you know, what happens to that other 75% is being tracked. I think there's an increasing amount of literature now. There was a great study in 2014, actually, it came out of Scotland, and they looked at the economic cost of women exiting the science pipeline, and they were able to put, well, not a dollar value on it, but a pound value on how much is this actually costing our economy. And it was a very big number in the hundreds of millions of pounds. And Scotland doesn't have a huge scientific community. So if you think about what that is doing to an economy like the United States, which is so innovation dependent, then I think, you know, you can really start putting numbers to this, and this is when systems start to move. You know, I also think the other sort of cause for optimism, I believe science itself is changing. You know, having done this for many, many years now, the system I came up in, most women of my age came up in, is where you have, you know, a very hierarchical structure, a laboratory or a field unit, usually run by one very powerful figure, often, historically, that would have been a male. And you will see that that person has the direction of the science agenda and the power of kind of life, death, and career progression. And when that's good, it's very good. When it's bad, it's horrid. And now I think science is changing to a much more open, team, collaborative way of doing science. And I think that's really going to play to women's strengths.
So what I hear you say is that the system may, in fact, be undergoing a self-correction that may, in turn, be much more welcoming to some of the girls that you may be talking to tomorrow that are now only in fifth or eighth grade.
Right, absolutely. And I think that, you know, now that we're training young women to think about science in a way where they'll be working as part of a team that's transdisciplinary, that's usually international. I mean, that's a source of great excitement, but also I think, as I said, it's something that's going to play to the strengths that women bring to the scientific endeavor.
There'll be a lot of women who'll be hoping you're right.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for coming in. Dr. Helen Turner is a professor of biology and the dean of natural sciences and mathematics at Chaminade University. She'll be leading a panel discussion at the Science Symposium for Girls tomorrow.